This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Electromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Susie Adams. She's a CTO for Microsoft Federal. And we have a one-hour show, so Susie, I suggest you talk real fast because I don't know if we're going to get even the top 10 topics here.
Absolutely, John. Lots going on.
Let's bring our listeners up today. Tell us about your background and how you wound up in this position, Susie, please.
Sure. I've been with Microsoft about 15 years now. Prior to Microsoft, I worked in the Washington, D.C. region. I'm actually from here since around fourth grade in the Manassas, Virginia area. I went to George Mason University. Grew up as a developer, so I am a developer at the core in a variety of different technologies. Worked for many of the federal contractors in the local area, including folks like Booz Allen and some of the smaller shops doing work for the Department of Defense and the civilian agencies before I came to Microsoft. So I've really been focused on not just Microsoft technologies, but any technology that the federal government's been using over the last 25 years.
So soup to nuts, everyone from writing code to managing developers to just trying to understand how technology can help our federal listeners. That's a wide range of experience.
Yes, that's a good way to categorize it.
Wait, your name is wonderful for radio. Susie Adams. I use Susie Adams every single day. That's great. I want to talk about a name that's kind of difficult in the radio, and the name is Satya Nadella, Satya Nadella. Well, who is he? And maybe some of our listeners know who he is, and maybe you could tell us about this guy with this strange name.
Satya is our new CEO. He was announced, I think, in February of this past year, and with a lot of fanfare. In fact, you know, it was pretty interesting. In the first 6 or 7 days he was CEO, there were a lot of news articles that came out with headlines. In the first 6 days, Satya has completely changed
the company,
which is pretty funny. If you look at that,
it's
pretty hard.
Yeah,
you know, 100,000 plus full-time employees. And so if you look at kind of where Microsoft is today, it's pretty hard to move that ship in or to turn that ship in 6 days. So obviously some of this has been going on for quite some time underneath the hood. You know, in those first 6 days, he announced things like Office for iPad. Right? Now that's actually been in the works for several years now. And it was great that we finally announced it and put it out there. In fact, in the first, you know, several days, several weeks, we had over 27 million downloads from the Apple store, from the Apple App Store, which was pretty amazing. We also announced the availability of Office for iPhones and Androids. We announced that Windows would be free, which I thought was pretty amazing for 9-inch and smaller screens. So that means the phones, the little tablets that you see now out there, the Windows operating system is free. So our OEM providers can now build and innovate on top of those platforms without having to pay us a royalty or license fee.
We
for
have
Windows.
To talk fast. There's so much stuff. I mean, bang, 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 bang. I don't know if he did a lot, but he did a whole lot in this first few weeks. There's these new announcement. I mean, wow, it's machine
gun fire, isn't
it?
It's like the floodgates open. But it really, you know, if you think about kind of where we're trying to go, we're really trying to refocus ourselves and frankly change our vision from where we were, you know, 25 years ago and what our vision was with, you know, if you go back and think when Bill Gates created the company with Steve Ballmer, it was we want a PC on every desktop in every home and every office. That goal has pretty much been reached.
It's like
then
that was
some.
A small goal. Now yeah. It's in your hand, in the car, and everything else.
Well, if you go back then, it seemed pretty lofty. But
Tim O'Reilly's got this publishing company, and he has these books called In a Nutshell, you know, In a Nutshell, Python in a Nutshell, Windows SQL Server in a Nutshell. But I think if we look at the Satya's In a Nutshell, I think it's he wants to focus in on Azure as the next 5 years for Microsoft. It seems like take all these eyes and ears and focus on the cloud, whether it's with computing storage or whatever. So that seems to be the general picture. Is that a fair assessment?
It is. I think, you know, that it's cloud in combination with mobile. So, you know, if you look at our strategy moving forward, it's really we're calling it our mobile first, cloud first strategy or vision. Right. And you can really kind of look at this in a three major buckets. The first is, you know, there was a statement made, you know, Microsoft is a cross-platform company. I think a lot of people probably fell off their stools when they heard that. it doesn't really seem, you know, to go hand in hand with Microsoft. But in fact, we are now becoming a cross-platform company, right? It's, you know, not Windows only, but Windows and. It's Windows in our cloud, Windows in search, Windows and our competitors' operating systems. You know, for example, just this week we announced the Nokia X2 Android phone. Obviously, we purchased Nokia a while back, and everybody was super concerned. We'd kind of abandon all the other competitors' operating systems like Android, and here we go announcing, you know, a new mobile device on Nokia that supports the Android's operating system, but then also comes loaded with some of our native applications built for Android, things like our Outlook and OneNote applications and a few others like our OneDrive, our storage solution. So now we have those applications available regardless of the operating system or device you're using. So we really are trying to do that. We're going to shift our focus to developers. And when I say that, that also seems a little strange because the mantra from Steve Ballmer has always been the tagline, developers, developers, developers. And I think the big change there is that we're really going to focus on what the developers want to do from a building applications perspective. So not just now using .NET or on a Windows platform, we're actually going to focus on open source and helping them develop apps, not just for Windows, but for Google's Android, for Apple's iOS operating systems, as well as for Azure. So in our Azure platform, which I'm sure we'll get to a little later in the conversation, we completely embrace open source and all the other developer tools that help the developers on a worldwide basis work on those platforms.
I want to switch topics and talk about a movie called Blazing Saddles. There's a character in there called Mongo. You remember him? He was really a crazy guy. And there is a database called MongoDB. And one would think that MongoDB is about as far removed from Microsoft as vinegar and oil or water and fire. It just seems like two completely worlds. But there was a conference last week at MongoDB World, and looky who they're connecting up with, Microsoft. It's like, no, this can't be possible. But yes, you can run MongoDB in Windows Azure. Really?
Absolutely.
And it's open source. The point is that this is kind of a I call it maybe t-shirt type software, guys in the garage in t-shirts working on this strange name of a database, NoSQL database. I mean, you guys are famous for your SQL database. No, this is a NoSQL database and running on Microsoft. It's just, it doesn't, for an old geezer like me, it's like, oh, no, wait a minute, this is a wine glass and what's in, there's, you know, you're carrying around transmission fluid and the wine. It doesn't fit, does it?
No, you know, it's funny. I mean, most people are like, you know, you can't possibly do that. But we are. And in fact, we announced a number of new partnerships. It's not just open source that we're supporting. Developers can develop in Ruby, Python, Perl, use Eclipse, right? Linux, almost all the versions of Linux are supported on Azure today. But we also announced partnerships with folks like SAP and Oracle, right? And Salesforce. So that now all of our developers can actually build and host their applications, whether it's running Oracle on top of Azure or integrating with a Salesforce.com application. And so we really are trying to make sure that we're attentive to our developer community and what our customers are looking to do in both in public sector development, but also just across the enterprise.
If you kind of sit back so I got Salesforce on my notebook. It works real well with my Windows 7. Okay. What about a Salesforce app? Well, how about my Salesforce app? Can it work on a Windows phone? Well, it only makes sense that it should be able to, shouldn't it? I mean, why would they not want to partner with the big dog? It detaches, you go, oh, no, it doesn't make sense. But if you think about it, it does make sense, doesn't it? I mean, if mobile apps are what Salesforce seems to be moving into, and people are using Windows mobile devices, well, then it's a match.
Yeah, absolutely. We want to make sure that anybody developing an application that we can support it running on a Windows phone, on our Windows 8 operating system. We just announced a new version of the Windows phone, Windows Phone 8, which is, we'll talk about, I guess, a little bit later in the show. But we really want to make sure that across the board, as developers are writing code, and if you look at the heart of where Microsoft came from, we're a software company. Right? We want to make sure that anybody writing software, right, using Microsoft tools or Microsoft languages, that software can be supported on any platform and give the end users the same experiences regardless of the device they're using or where they're at when they're using it.
And the argument for the federal government is that, and oh, by the way, we're going to do something extra special for you and do that all in a safe environment, which is what this audience is really interested in. You know, they may go home and use this and that and say, I can do this and then the other thing, but at work I want to do X, Y, and Z. And you know what? My hands are tied because of security concerns. So Susie Adams rushes to the rescue and says, no, we can help. Let's take a break and we'll get a horse in here for you to ride in on. You can say, no, Susie Adams is here to rescue you. And we'll talk about your response to some of these problems for my listeners, federal IT professionals. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Susie Adams. She's the CTO for Microsoft Federal. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio is Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer, CTO for Microsoft Federal. We covered too many topics in the first block there. I tried to write down all of them with too many things. Let's just say that Microsoft has got a new guy in charge. They're changing everything around. There's new products. There's new services. There's all kinds of stuff. Big move to the cloud. Big move to mobile. I mean, we can just get a whole long list here. From a listener's perspective, so many of my listeners are federal IT professionals. And they're listening to this and scratching their heads going, well, what's this mean to me? I can use it at home. My wife can use it at work, but I'm here at the Department of Interior and I'm boxed out of all this. So not true, Susie. Huh? Not true. You going to ride to the rescue here for my listeners?
Well, I won't say I will ride to the rescue. I'd like it just to be me. But no, it isn't true. You know, we've been working with federal customers for 25 plus years now, incorporating federal requirements into our packaged software products for years and years and years. We're going to do the same, and as well as all the other cloud service providers out there, and make sure that our cloud offerings can meet the federal requirements, things like FedRAMP, FIPS 140-2, right, the DoD requirements, the DISA Cloud Broker cloud security model that's out there to achieve a provisional ATO from on the DoD side as well. And so we're working, you know, very aggressively to achieve that. You know, for example, with FedRAMP, we already achieved a provisional ATO with our Windows Azure product. We currently are working with them with our Office 365 and our CRM products. And we'll bring, you know, basically our entire cloud suite through the provisional ATO process with the JAB.
You know, there are listeners that know this term very well, and some may never have heard it before, A-Z-U-R-E, Azure. Latin root means blue or sky, typically. That's usually in Spanish, it's azul, it means a sky or light blue. So maybe give us another nutshell. Tell us what exactly Azure is and what it means to a federal listeners. I mean, why should they even be concerned about it?
Sure, absolutely. Actually, blue is my favorite color, which is... So if you look at what Azure is, and there is a lot of confusion around it, and I think the confusion really stems from how we launched Azure years ago. Azure was really very clearly focused on platform as a service when we first launched it. So we were kind of ahead of the game because, as most people know, most enterprise companies and federal agencies aren't quite ready for platform as a service. Although I will say there's been a trend, a shift in the thinking here, where companies and federal agencies are looking at platform as a service capabilities, mainly integrating those with existing services. But what we've done over the last two or three years now is incorporate infrastructure as a service as well. And so if you look at our core platform that we've had on-premise for years, at the core, we had the Windows operating system. So what we're really doing is taking our entire platform stack and moving that to the cloud. And from an infrastructure and platform as a service perspective, that's really the core is Windows Server. So Windows Azure is really based on Windows Server 2012 at the core. And then on top of it, we add basically infrastructure and platform as a service capabilities. So things like compute and networking. So we can handle virtual networks, virtual servers, cloud services, which is really more of our platform as a service offerings with things we call web roles and worker roles. We have something called ExpressRoute. ExpressRoute gives you a dedicated private network fiber connection to Azure, which is something most of our federal agencies are very, very, very interested in. And then we have something called Traffic Manager that helps you load balance the incoming traffic. And that's just the core of the infrastructure as a service capabilities. We also have building block services that add on top of that, which I'll go through in a second. But if you think of Azure, really what we're trying to do is do what we did for the DOS operating system, and I'll date myself a little here. You know, I began developing back, you know, out of school, out of George Mason in DOS with Clipper C and assembly, and then Windows came along. And when Windows came along, what it really did is add a layer of abstraction above all that complexity. And that's really what Azure's doing, right? Azure's taking it up the stack a little bit and getting rid of some of that complexity by adding very sophisticated software automation. You know, under the hood, the cloud's really all about software automation. right? How do I automate some of these very manual tasks that I had before so that the end users can focus on the actual application they're building, right? Versus having to flip all the bits.
So if I'm a software developer in Tulsa and I'm looking at a tool set, I say, well, I'm going to look at Azure because of compute, data services, app services. Okay. We know that 1,000 customers a day in the commercial world are signing up for Azure. So it must be doing something right. So what about my govies? I mean, is there something they want a more specialized system? I saw a press release for something called Government Community Cloud, or what exactly is this? And I think my listeners' ears going to go up when they hear about this.
Absolutely. So, you know, originally we announced something called Office 365 Government Community Cloud. That's for our email cloud services that we've had in production now for several years. And we have, you know, about 8+ cabinet level agencies now that have either migrated or in the process of migrating to Office 365 GCC.
And that's software as a service.
That's software as a service. What we're trying to do now is just round out our portfolio of cloud services for our government customers. And so the next obvious step is Azure. So we have to have the core platform there. And so we announced, in March of this past year, we made several more announcements, but probably about 6-9 months ago, we announced the intent to build an Azure Government Community Cloud. So this cloud will be dedicated to U.S. government customers, federal, state, local, and tribal. All data will remain in the CONUS United States. It'll be in our Boynton, Virginia data center, which is one of our newest Generation 4 data centers, and our Des Moines, Iowa data center. It'll be run by U.S. persons with NACI and public trust moderate background investigations. So
overcoming the objection before they're asked. Well, it's got to be United States. Oh, we can do that. It's got to be 2 different locations for disaster recovery. Oh, we can do that. It's got to be segmented and segregated. Oh, we can do that. It's got to be different physical. Oh, we can do that. Okay, go down the checklist. I mean, you're pretty far down the checklist, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is kind of, you know, we've been doing this for years anyhow. Now we're just extending that to our data centers and to the cloud services we offer. And, you know, and one of the things about Azure, it's just not infrastructure as a service. We have a number of building block services on top of it, which make it really easy for people to stand up production workloads. We have things like websites that allow people to quickly and easily stand up not only Microsoft websites, but open source websites. Right? You can do a variety of just open source websites out of the box. We have things like mobile services where you can build and host backend apps for any mobile app without really having to write any code. So it's not just a Windows phone, but it can be an Android or iOS phone.
You know, and I don't want to beat the drum here, but if you go to Twitter, there's 224,000 people who are following at Azure.
Absolutely.
I mean, that is a whole, it's no Lady Gaga, but that's a lot of people being interested in all the new things, and people know a lot of the basics of Microsoft, and now you can trust Microsoft for federal, state, and local government. And by the way, it also connects to that little thing we're carrying around all the time. If you know, 47% of emails are read on mobile devices, and a lot of that email is from Outlook. So, I mean, this is a match here, isn't it?
No, it absolutely is. And I think, you know, when people look at Azure and they say, why is Microsoft supporting open source? Why can I stand up a Drupal instance, a Drupal website, just by a few clicks of a button? Right, without having to write up any code, just spin up virtual machines that are already provisioned with Drupal, already provisioned with WordPress. Why can I build in Node.js or PHP, Ruby, Python, Perl? How come I have Hadoop? Microsoft supporting Hadoop, which is an open source.
Now, this is the big shocker, you know. I had Mike Olson from Cloudera in here 3 weeks ago. You know, probably know Mike, and he's a big Hadooper. And Hadoop, really? Working in a Microsoft platform? These are not kindred spirits. Typically, 5 years ago, you wouldn't put them in the same room together, but now you support instances of Hadoop, don't you?
Absolutely. I mean, as you know, if you look at Microsoft, you know, and where we came from, we're a software development company. Right? If we can build software and it runs behind the scenes on our Azure platform, why do we care if it's open source technology or not? Why don't we care what device it's actually, you know, the end user experiences on? It should be able to work. It's a heterogeneous world. We should be able to give our users the user experience they need and want and the advice of choice wherever and regardless of where they're at.
I'm just putting two and two together. So if there's a govy that's listening and has a problem with large data sets and they want to play around with something like Hadoop, but they don't want to do it in a dangerous environment, this is the opportunity right here. This is like a little a backyard that's all fenced off and safe that my govies can play around with Hadoop and see if it solves their problems or not without coming in any, let's say, security problems.
Well, you know, absolutely. So if you've ever stood up on a Hadoop instance, it's fairly complicated and takes usually a lot of time. Right?
Then there's Hive and there's Pig and there's so many other layers to that. It's really tricky.
It's really tricky. And so what we tried to do was simplify that whole process and literally let you go stand up a Hadoop cluster by walking through a wizard. Yeah. And that's pretty amazing in itself, just there to be able to stand it up, test it, and then destroy it. Right. And just because now you want to use
what's Impala and fire it up. What's Hive? What's Pig? I mean, there's so many specialized terms within Hadoop that you really can't get a book in a nutshell. You really have to do it. And this is a nice, safe backyard for my govies to play in without getting in trouble. It's a really nice way to test out some tools for big data. Let's take a break, come back. We'll do a little mobile madness and talk about Satya Nadella a few more times. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, we have Susie Adams, CTO of Microsoft Federal.
Management Friday on Federal News Radio. Friday mornings at 10, listen for the American Federation of Government Employee Workforce Perspective on Inside Government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch to learn the best career path for you. Management Friday on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Susie Adams. She's the CTO for Microsoft Federal. And we've been doing a fire hose interview here where we're trying to cover 5,000 topics in 45 minutes or whatever the time is here. And we couldn't, you know, I would get a demerit or a letter in my file if I didn't talk about Microsoft mobile madness. So let's talk about some mobile issues. And what about my poor govies? Are they getting painted in the corner and locked out of all this? Tell us about Microsoft and mobile, please, Susie.
Absolutely. So, you know, if you look at where the federal government is today, the mantra of anytime, anywhere, any device, you know, has been kind of front and center for some time now. And if you look at, you know, agencies, as they try to adopt this, they hit the obvious challenges. And the first one is, you know, how do I protect my data? How do I make sure that the people using the mobile devices are, in fact, employees and have and should have access to that mobile data? And what happens if they lose that phone or lose that device? Because it's not, mobile is really not just about a phone anymore, right? It's about any device. Any device, whether you're accessing it from home, when you're accessing it from maybe a satellite office overseas, right? Or whether you're just sitting at a Starbucks. And so, you know, usually what, you know, from a Microsoft perspective, and of course, as a company, we had to go through this. We're a very mobile company. I mean, we have anytime, anywhere access on a global basis and have for, you know, the last 10, 15 years. And so one of the things we did is kind of put together a framework for doing this. And the first thing that we recommend to agencies that they do is learn to classify or come up with a data classification system for their data just in general. Really a policy to say, what's my low impact, high impact, and moderate impact or medium impact data?
So instead of mobile device management, it's mobile data management here. That's what you're getting to.
Yeah. You have to figure out, okay, what is the data that the end users are going to access? And then you take a step back once you've classified that and come up with a policy for how people should access it. And you start to look at what type of device should be allowed to access that data. Should it be allowed to be accessed from a mobile network? If so, should that end user have to VPN in, for example, and should they have to provide a two-factor authentication, a smart card, whether it be a CAC or an HSPD-12 card? Right? When you start to look at those types of things and come up with a framework, you literally, you know, you come up with a multidimensional diagram that says, okay, if I'm a user and I'm in a Starbucks and I'm running, you know, a Windows phone or a Windows device and that device supports multi-factor authentication, well, then I can have access to everything but high-impact data. Right? And you start to, you know, realize very quickly that once you've come up with those policies, now you have to figure out how to implement them from a technology perspective.
Back when I was taking all my Microsoft tests, that was similar to role-based authorization, all those different acronyms I had to memorize years ago to take those.
RBAC.
Yeah, all those I had to memorize and take the test and try to pass and everything else. But so role-based access. And if I look at my, and I know my listeners, I talk to them all the time. There's new stuff rolling out constantly. There's new. I mean, Google makes 600 changes a year in their algorithm. So many new things going on. A lot of training is done with mobile devices. Google says that 40% of YouTube videos are viewed with handheld devices. So if you're a govy and you want to train your people, well, they may want a little short training video on their handheld device. All of a sudden, you can classify it in one way and allow them access. So all of a sudden, you're enabling them to learn more about the cloud. And maybe there's a six-minute video on Azure that they want. Maybe it's Susie Adams talking about, you know, security and mobile devices in the cloud. I think that's a good way to, I think that, you know, I have three kids in their 20s. I think that's the way training's heading. It's 6-minute video on something short and quick, and bang, move on to something else.
And it's hard to get people to drop their phones.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think what people miss sometimes is that they go out and they try to buy all this new technology to implement the security policies or lock down the data. And if they take a step back, they actually probably already own some technology, whether it be Windows Server-based products or other products from other vendors that can help them do that already. And in fact, if you look at where Microsoft's going, you know, earlier on in the show, we talked about, you know, we're an evolving company, the new Microsoft, and we've really been making some pretty fundamental, some big changes fundamentally over the last year, year and a half or so. For example, Windows Server 2012, we now incorporated new capabilities, things like dynamic access control, which gives you the ability now to have access control on the device with device claims, not just on the groups that the users were members of, which is the way we used to do things to lock down data, which is a huge advancement. So now I can go in and say, if this user comes in and they happen to be on an iOS device and they haven't used a two-factor authentication or haven't two-factor authenticated, then they won't have access to this data. And I can actually lock down a file like that. And that's just natively part of the operating system. Right? And most of the agencies today already have rights or own or have deployed Windows Server 2012 in some fashion. Right? And once you get that core infrastructure in place, then you really need to look at your clients and devices. Right? From a client's perspective, I think all the major client vendors today and operating systems vendors today have started to incorporate more mobile management capabilities into their products. I know we have with Windows 8, we give you the ability to do something called direct access and virtual smart cards. So now instead of having your physical smart card, we actually have something called a trusted platform module that sits. It's actually, think of it as the device or the chip sitting in the device itself. So you put your smart card in and your certificate gets loaded to that particular device, right? Instead of having to carry around or use that jacket on a phone. So for example, in our new Windows Phone 8, we now have the TPM capability just baked into the phones themselves.
Well, you know, a lot of my listeners think about Active Directory and managing access rights. And it would seem that if you make and transition that to mobile devices, all of a sudden you're at the center of the nexus for understanding exactly where user rights can fit in with authorization, especially with Active Directory. It's almost the default standard now, and it really gives you a better perspective than other companies trying to put an add-on or a bolt-on to AD, huh?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think if you look at the devices themselves, they're getting more intelligent now. And the device manufacturers are now opening up the APIs at both the operating system, right, and the device level so that the mobile device management software packages that are out there today can have more granular control over them. We did this in our Windows 8 in our Windows 8.1 phone release. We now give you the ability to manage devices and manage things like the onboard hardware capabilities, such as a camera, Bluetooth, or GPS, as well as the NFC. You can turn it on or off, which is something that the federal agencies have been really asking for quite some time.
Well, in our Firehose interview, we're not going to talk about new server, the new system center, the new Visual Studio, new Azure, new SQL Server, new Dynamics, the new phone, but we're going to talk about Nokia. So the little garden hose here is, well, okay, tell me about Nokia. More new stuff. So what are you guys doing with Nokia?
Oh, all kinds of great things. So, you know, Nokia, if you look at our acquisition of Nokia, and one of the things they really bring to the table, obviously, their devices, and they have low-cost devices. And so from a global perspective, there's huge opportunity there for Microsoft. From a federal perspective, I think what you're going to see is just, you know, if you look at the new X2 device that got released, that's an Android device. That Android device, if you hold it in your hand, right, kind of looks and feels from a software perspective almost like a Windows 8 phone. It has the Windows 8 tiles. It has all the software that you would normally expect to connect to your email. So Outlook, whether you're using Outlook.com or you know, an agency email, you now have an email app that's really based on Outlook Mobile and Office Mobile. The Office Mobile runs on top of it, so you can do Word, PowerPoint, Excel, right? You have OneDrive capabilities to store your data, not just OneDrive for your personal, right, or commercial, or, you know, your home use, but also for your enterprise use, can now be available just on your phone, right? Which is, I think, you know, what you're going to see us do is it's going to give us the ability to branch out, right, from an operating system and capabilities perspective.
That was SkyDrive, is that what it was called, and it changed to OneDrive?
It used to be SkyDrive, yeah. OneDrive used to be SkyDrive, and we rebranded it to OneDrive. We also just announced 15 gigabytes of storage for free for consumers, and a terabyte for as little as $6 per user per month if you own Office 365.
On April 1st, everyone changed their prices, and I thought it was April Fool's Day, and it's, maybe it's April and June here, but you know, I can remember when 15 gig, you know, how much again? 15 gigabytes?
15 gigabytes.
That was a whole lot of memory. I mean, that was not like your dream drive. A dream drive was a gigabyte hard drive.
Whoa. Oh, yeah, no, yeah. Absolutely.
Dream drives are changing. I'm going to give you 30 seconds to talk about Surface Pro 3, and that's all you got because that's all we got.
So the Surface Pro, if you go out and you look at our original. Release there. It was a little bit bulky. The screen was a little smaller. The kickstand really didn't move. And, you know, people were like, hey, I need more hard drive space. And so with Surface Pro 3, what we really did is we increased the size of the screen. We made it a little bit thinner. We made the kickstand move up and down. We made it much more powerful from both a RAM and a hard disk perspective. And we improved the battery life. And so if you look at the reviews, and I have used them before, you know, they're getting great reviews, almost as if they're close to being able to replace a traditional tablet.
They're getting reviews from artists. That's what I'm fascinated by.
Yeah, and
by.
Now the pen. Yeah. Really, we've improved the digital pen use on top of it.
I mean, that's really the shocker. For office people, I would think they have one set of criteria, which is probably durability and safety and reliability. But when the artists start looking at it and saying, well, this is a tool we can use, then I start going, well, this is really, it's like mind-altering Microsoft. Well, what do you do with artists over there? Oh, it's not developers. Maybe it's artists, and developers, and users, and mobile people, and in my govies as well. Let's take a break and come back. We'll talk more about 10,000 subjects and Microsoft's new all over the place. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio is Susie Adams, CTO for Microsoft Federal. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio we have Susie Adams, CTO of Microsoft Federal. We've so far covered 972 topics, and we have the last segment here. Many of my listeners get information from blogs and Twitter and everything else, and I mentioned earlier that Azure has 200,000 followers on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @RayGilroy. Are you active in Twitter at all, Susie?
I am. I'm probably not as active as I would like to be. I kind of go in spurts, but mine is @AdamSusie.
Well, switch around. That's good. Many of my students and listeners read blogs. I have a blog called Tech Tuesday Blog. Is there a blog that you read to keep up? And is there someone, maybe a secret source that you can keep up with these 10,000 topics? I mean, who do you read? Who's a good blogger for you?
You know, I don't look at a single blog. I think I'm kind of a tech junkie. So I get up every morning for about at least a good hour and a half, and I just kind of troll the web and the blogs that are out there and kind of pick up things. So I guess I don't follow a single blogger per se.
I don't think that's unusual. You have to graze and see what's hot and what's not hot. And what is hot now is machine learning. And when I typed in Microsoft for this interview, bang, machine learning came right up there. And the article was, well, Microsoft has all this ability to collect this data in large clouds and do Hadoop. Now, and they also, by the way, they have Excel and have all these tools. So maybe they can put them all together and try to understand this big data with this concept of machine learning. Is that what machine learning is, or am I getting it all mixed up?
You know, whenever I hear machine learning, I have this picture in my head. I think it was a Star Trek episode where, you know, they had this computer and the computer was learning off the people and it became so intelligent that it took over the world and killed all the people. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things like, really, can you teach a computer to learn? And so, you know, if you look at what we're doing with machine learning, it's very similar to what we were and what we are doing with big data. So if you look at, and you mentioned, John, the complications or the difficulties of standing up a Hadoop cluster, right, with all the different open source projects. And what we did is kind of take a step back and say, you know, what are we really good at? We're really good at making hard things simple, putting that layer of abstraction above them, and then using tools to get access to the data so that anybody, regardless, you know, they don't have to be a data expert to be able to go in and access that. That's exactly what we're doing, right? And then with big data, we in Excel enabled basically Hadoop, which is kind of a neat concept. From a data analytics perspective. With machine learning, right? Machine learning is really the mainstay of big data predictive analytics. You know, if you look at the search engines like Bing, if you look at GPS systems, if you even look at Cortana, right, our new digital assistant, right? Machine learning is really what gives her the ability to do what she does when you ask her a question, right? And our goal really is to kind of democratize machine learning. Right? Make machine learning so easy that, you know, the average Joe can actually get access to it, to put it in a cloud, to put it in the cloud as a pay-for service, so that now developers can actually build applications on top of it without having to create their own machine learning infrastructure.
You know, Susie, that answer gives a lot of listeners just pause and say, now she's starting to sound like a nerd. And so, so what I've designed is a scientific 10-question test. And I will determine if you're a card-carrying nerd or not by the answers that I get from these 10 questions. I'm going to give you this test right now. It's called the Nerdometer. First question. So we break into your house this evening, and how many old-school desktops do we find around Susie's house?
They're hidden. They're hidden in the graveyard of a closet in my office. No, they are not plugged
in. Well, that's the right answer.
I think I have two in some assemblance. Yeah. Some my nephew has pillaged from to build a gaming machine.
And how many cell phones have you purchased in the last year?
Three.
Three. That's the right answer. And do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I do.
Yes, you do, right? And do you have a personal blog?
I do not.
Okay. And, I'll ask this question because I have to. What kind of smartphone do you have?
Of course, a Windows smartphone.
Good. And what's the most popular app that you've used in the last 30 days? Yeah, what do you think?
Oh, wow. So, you know, I've put a lot of apps on my machine. Just yesterday, though, I stood up a Slingbox app.
Slingbox.
So I have
I'll tell your boss about that.
I have relatives that actually look at my TV remotely.
check in, Susie, at work.
Slingbox,
what's she doing?
Yeah.
So we break into your house, and how many tablet devices do we find there?
Lots. Between 15 and 20.
Whoa, really?
Yeah.
Well,
you're high
on the nerd scale. All of a sudden, the nerdometer is going click, 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 click. That's getting high. Social networking sites you're active in?
Facebook, LinkedIn. Those are the major ones.
And just pick one. How many posts on Facebook in the last month?
That I post.
Yeah.
I usually post one at least every other day. Yeah. That's usually work related, and then friends I can't even count.
And here's the piece de resistance: is the last book read was electronic or paper?
Actually, it was paper, which is highly unusual. But somebody gave me a book, and so I was at the beach. And so, you know, you can't really read electronic on the beach.
A nerd would never admit to that.
I know.
You're way
hard.
Too honest, you know. I'll have to put this through my little computer in my basement and come up with the result, and I'll print it out on green bar and say. But it's always fascinating to find out what personal technology choices they have. And when I think of Microsoft, I think of personal computers and their move to the enterprise and now move to the cloud. So where do you see Microsoft Federal heading in the next 4 or 5 years? More mobile, more cloud, more just everything, everywhere? Or do you agree with Satya about the whole move to Azure?
It's mobile first, cloud first for us. I mean, across the board and for federal customers. And so you'll see, you know, over the next 6 months or so, there'll be a number of announcements where we're taking our portfolio cloud applications and services and introducing those to the federal marketplace, just as we did with Office 365, Government, Community Cloud, and Azure. We'll continue to incorporate the federal requirements into our cloud offerings and also into our mobile devices and give developers the ability to build apps right on those devices. And you'll see us approach this
heterogeneous manner?
You'll see us approach this from a very heterogeneous manner as opposed to the kind of what most people think of the old school Microsoft.
And I think that's, what's interesting about your background is that, you know, you start off as a developer and have been with Microsoft for 15 years, and the change that's taken place in Microsoft where I think of, you know, license-based stuff. I would never think of phones. But what's happening is Microsoft is spreading out into areas, and maybe they're trying to leverage some of the experience they've had using just a simple product like Excel and taking that. And so many people apply it, and so many people have the knowledge of using Excel. And I once knew a woman who did a newsletter on Excel. It's incredible. And so you can take that skill set that most people have and say, okay, let's take and apply this for predictive analytics or for managing some larger data sets instead of using something as confusing as Hadoop. And it's really confusing. So the modalities that people understand now, they can apply them to the cloud using Microsoft technology everyone's kind of grown up with.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you look at where Microsoft's came from, we are a packaged product, you know, company. Basically, you bought a packaged product, you went to the store, you purchased it, and you installed it on your laptop with a disk. Now we're going to subscription-based, right, download services for Office. You no longer have to go and buy an Office box. You can buy a copy of Office and extend that to 5 members of your family. The same holds true, right, as you go into the enterprise. We have the ability to now do subscription-based, where those updates are just automatically sent to your device. So we are evolving too as the marketplace evolves.
We had a Microsoft partner, Xgility, on the air, Chris Hornbecker, and on the air he said, everything's in the cloud. It's all in the Microsoft cloud from the start of the company till now. There's no servers in the back room. And if someone loses a notebook computer, well, who cares? Because it's all in the cloud anyway. It's all backed up. Just get another one and fire it up, and off they go. So it's a real change. And I think the people, the partners here who are going to come up with the Microsoft Partner Conference in July, are going to learn. And I think if you're listening now and want to get more information, you can go to the Microsoft Partner Conference, usually mid-July, downtown D.C. Is that when it usually comes up?
It actually starts July 14th. Satya Nadella will be in town for that event. There'll be a public sector track that you can attend as well.
And maybe even get an autograph from the world-famous Susie Adams, huh?
I will be around.
Will you be on your horse riding to the rescue for the gubbies that are listening?
I don't know if it'll be a horse.
Maybe not. Maybe a motorcycle, but not a horse. I'd like to thank everyone for listening. This is John Gilroy with Federal Tech Talk. I'd like to thank my guest, Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer for Microsoft Federal. Thanks, Susie.
Thanks, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. FederalNewsRadio.com. It's the only place to read Mike Causey. Get the latest news on your federal pay, benefits, and retirement at FederalNewsRadio.com. Search term Causey.